up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so are the Cleveland Browns a real threat in the AFC North, in the AFC in general? Are they for real? Is the acquisitions that they've made, is the team that was so fun to watch last year, winning 5 of its last 7 games with Baker Mayfield not really looking like a rookie, throwing 27 touchdown passes? Is this team going into 2019 everything we are saying about them? It sure looks like it on paper. But we will get into more details on this team that acquired Odell Beckham Jr. They already had Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb running the football, picked up Kareem Hunt, who is, despite an 8-game suspension, still should be productive for them. There are on the defensive side, Myles Jarrett, right? They still have a defense that can get after the quarterback. But there is this looming cloud that hangs over the franchise that I've been talking about all morning. The fact that, well, we haven't seen maybe this level of talent before in the 20 years that this team has been around since its reincarnation in 1999, there have been a few years where there has been a lot of optimism coming from Cleveland and the Browns going into a season, and has not panned out. But most recently, it has been pessimism. Most recently, it has been this team is not good. It is not going to be very good. They are still looking for a quarterback. And the proof was they went winless 1 year, one win in another year, and really hadn't given anybody any reason to be excited about them. But this year is different. People are genuinely excited about them because, again, they were a team last year that played games very close and almost pulled out some victories. Lord knows the Steelers needed it last year. The Steelers needed the Browns to beat the Ravens in the final game of the season, and if it wasn't for a late interception by Mayfield, they might have pulled that off. They were a threat to win every single week, and even though they only won 7 games, they were in a lot of those losses, and that's a step in the right direction. But this division, which has been owned by Pittsburgh and Baltimore with an occasional Cleveland-Cincinnati angle to the division, could now have a new player involved in its race to the top. Today's the day we talk Browns. Today's the day we preview them and to really feel like whether or not the hype is justified. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, on Twitter at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. And that's Ron with 2 N's.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. 1992 is the year on Throwback Thursday. On this date, Dream Team won gold at the Barcelona Olympics, bringing Croatia running through the tournament, winning by massive double digits. No one was surprised, but as we talked about earlier, it was a fun thing to watch the collection of the greatest basketball players on the planet, all gathered under one with one team, coached by Chuck Daly, and winning the gold medal at the Olympics and showing the United States dominance in the sport. That's what we're celebrating today. What was that tune? I know that song, but I don't know who did it.
That's Back to the Hotel.
Oh, okay.
Into Deep.
Very good. Very good. That was another
definite one-hit wonder.
God, 92. I'm trying to remember my like my summer of 92, like where I was.
I was a sophomore.
Yeah, I was in college. I had a roommate. He was a beach cleaner. He cleaned beaches that summer.
That sounds fascinating.
He really liked the job. His name was Evan. I went to high school with him. And he was a really good kid, really great guy. And he did 2 things in my entire time that I knew him in college that I liked about him. One, he spent the summer as a beach cleaner, which he would ride around and he would pick up trash, pick up the beach. He'd walk along the beach, but then he rode one of those buggies, you know, that you would see patrol the beach and pick up trash and whatnot. And he loved it. He was at the beach every single day and he dug it. But the other thing he wanted to do really badly was he wanted to be a bus driver, like one of the college bus drivers. And he got to do that too. And he drove the big bus all around town. And different routes and stuff.
Like sports? Sports not, teams or?
No, we're transportation, like where college students lived outside the campus. They could take the bus into campus and everything, you know, all he drove the big bus. And that was another part of his job.
That seems so funny.
And I waited tables, and I was, you know, I did the standard restaurant work, you know, waited tables, a little bartending, yep. You know, that kind of thing. And that was an easier way to make money for me. I didn't have to work 9-10 hours a day. I could make good money working four, but he wanted to drive the bus.
That's all you had to do.
That's all you had to do. Serve him some food. I worked at this really nice Chinese restaurant in Dover, New Hampshire, my later years of my college life. And I just went back there. Two summers ago, I went back to visit, and I went back and the guy, there was a family run restaurant, great family. And the guy recognized me after like 20 something years. He knew who I was. He goes, "Hey, Tony." Now there was one woman there. She didn't recognize me immediately. She had to kind of put her finger on my name, but one of the guys knew who I was. That was kind of neat, but I was reminiscing with them. But that was my roommate in 92. My roommate was cleaning the beaches and also driving a bus.
My roommate was mom and dad.
Oh yeah, really?
I was a sophomore in high school.
That's true. You're a sophomore in high school. What are you talking about? You of course it was mom and dad. It was mom and dad for me too.
Yeah. I was still home.
Yeah.
No cool sir. Nobody I knew was trying to get a job cleaning beaches.
Cleaning beaches. He would bring back, like, there would always be some beach promotion, like some company would do some beach promotion where they would have cups or koozies or whatever, and he always would find them in the trash, and he would pick them up and he'd bring them to the house. So he had like a whole bunch of plastic cups representing different companies throughout the area, because he would go, "Yeah, I found about four or five of these, you know, cups that people went, I don't want this," and they would just throw it away, and he would grab them. And that was what we used for cups and stuff. It was kind of a basic existence. He was the guy I told. Did I tell you this? But that I bought a juicer in college late one night with the juice man. I think he might have been on vacation.
No.
When I told the story, I was watching an infomercial and the juice man was on, and me and Evan were late, and we ordered a juicer at like 1 o'clock in the morning because we thought that's what we'll do. We'll start juicing and be more healthy. And that lasted like about a week when we realized produce was expensive for college kids. Like, fresh fruits and vegetables aren't cheap. So we ended up dumping that. And plus, it was a pain to clean without a dishwasher. Cleaning it by hand? Forget it. I also had another roommate that brewed his own beer. Have you ever had somebody do that?
That I did.
That is pretty cool.
That was really cool. God, does it stink.
It really does. It really does.
It's a foul smell that lingers for days and days and days. But
He had it down, though, man. He had the bottles and the caps and the sterilization and all of that stuff, and he brewed his own beer. It was pretty good.
Yeah, when I was in college, I lived with five other guys. It was six of us in one house.
And did you do the brewing, or you and...
No, I didn't do the brewing.
But somebody did?
I sampled the brew.
Yeah, me too. Me too. He was really into it.
I remember my favorite thing I always reminisce when I think about the house when I lived with they were all a bunch of my fraternity brothers. We all got a house together on our own. And this is something that just doesn't happen anymore. But one brother was, he was in charge of the phone bill, and he would go through painstakingly circling.
Oh God, yes.
The numbers, the long distance calls to, you know, it's like, oh, this is, you know, so-and-so's mom and dad he called, and this is so-and-so's dad that he called, and we'll go through and then tally it all up and then, you know, come back to us and go, yeah, you owe me, not only, you know, we split the regular bill, you know, evenly amongst us all, because, and then on top of that, you owe about $675 for these long distance calls.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
God. And then I think back and like, yeah, that would never happen anymore.
Nope, don't have to do that.
Nope.
Those days.
It's just so
10
bizarre.
Cents a minute. After midnight, it was like 6 cents.
Was it like 10, 10, 3, 2, 1?
That's right.
Call that for cheaper long distance phone calls.
That's right. That's amazing. All right, so we are previewing the Cleveland Browns today, and I was looking forward to this all week. I mean, the Bengals, all right, but the Bengals, despite the optimism
yesterday. I mean, I think we decided AFC North, you were like, you know what, I'm excited for the AFC North, you know, because I know I can talk Ravens, I can talk Bengals, I know all about these teams, but yeah, the Browns are the most interesting team. I mean,
very interesting.
They're the it team coming into this NFL season.
And a lot of it is, of course, all right, when you bring in Odell Beckham into this team that was exciting again last year and now is going to be even more exciting. But the cool thing about this was, and this is not something that we saw a lot of with the old Browns. Odell Beckham, I know he was dealing with wanting to leave the Giants, and maybe his enthusiasm was finally getting out of the Giants, but he was so happy to go to Cleveland. We don't normally see that. We don't normally hear about that, but he was so excited to go to Cleveland. I think, and this is very, there are very few franchises in sports that have had these long championship droughts where you just know there's an explosion waiting to happen from the fan base if they were to win a Super Bowl. And Cleveland is one of them. Buffalo is one of them. Detroit is one of them. These long, long, long time franchises. And again, I know the Browns are an expansion team from 99, but they do still carry over the city's history of football. But these old kind of rust belt type of cities, working class type of cities, where you just know there's an explosion of energy coming if they were to win a Super Bowl. And I think there is an attractiveness now with Cleveland that they've got something going on now. You know, Dorsey's the GM. Baker Mayfield is a fun quarterback. He can throw the ball and he's accurate. Maybe it was just a rookie thing that happens sometimes that he comes back down to earth, but man, it doesn't feel like it. And I think if you're Odell Beckham, this is an exciting team to be a part of, and winning here is going to be different. Winning in Cleveland, I'm telling you, is going to be different than a lot of other places. It's much better to win in Cleveland than to win in Jacksonville. I think it's much better to win in Cleveland than to win with the LA Rams. I think it's much better to win in Cleveland than to win in a few teams in the NFL that don't have either the longevity or sort of that painstaking feeling like, man, it's never going to be our year. Remember, this Browns fan base, if they're old enough, went through two heartbreaking losses in the playoffs to John Elway and the Broncos. I mean, Beiner was ready to punch it into the end zone, and he fumbles the football. And then Elway goes down 90 yards for a touchdown. These are heartbreaking defeats that they had in the postseason.
Yeah, not only heartbreaking defeats, but they're named.
Right, they've got names to them, and they're part of the lore of the Cleveland. Before LeBron James won the title, that was the overall encompassing feeling about Cleveland, right? That all of their teams had suffered these kind of losses, these kind of disappointments, where they've had good teams, but they've fallen short, or something's wrong, think about that city over the last few decades and some of the things that it's had to go through with its franchises. Now, take away the championship the LeBron won, but you're talking about the Indians losing a game 7 to the Cubs. You're talking about the Indians losing a game 7 to the Marlins back in the late 90s. You're talking about the decision where LeBron James kicks the city in the face moving down to Miami. I mean, you know, Michael Jordan over Craig Elo. I mean, the two losses by Cleveland in the playoffs. I mean, there's this whole collection. Oh, losing the franchise? Losing the beloved franchise to begin with? Right? Where Art Modell takes the team to Baltimore? I mean, this is a city that has this, they're just dying for a title. Finally, LeBron got them one. But with the Browns, if they can go to the playoffs and compete for a Super Bowl eventually, who knows when, but if that day comes, it's an explosion of energy waiting to happen. And I'm curious about it because
you might have
like
to burn the city down.
Maybe.
I think it's the only effective way to celebrate them winning a Super Bowl is to burn it to the ground.
Because remember, they won NFL championships. Right? With Jim Brown back before the Super Bowl. And now, they've been. And again, as I said earlier, and I keep saying it, there's no excuse for what's happened to this team in 20 years. There's no excuse at all.
That's the only end game for what's happened in the last 20 years is if you can go ahead and say in the next 5 years, consistently make it to the playoffs, make it to the Super Bowl, maybe even win a Super Bowl, that I think will justify but. It would definitely bring closure to
this
20-year window of just ineptitude.
Right.
Where you knew going in that, doesn't matter. This team's going to have a losing season.
Can you imagine not being good in the NFL for 20 years? One playoff appearance in 20 years?
Well, or just be the other teams in the AFC North that you knew you had two wins.
Right, exactly.
Guaranteed. Like, you always knew you had two wins. The Steelers for years, like, well, we got a tough schedule, but they wouldn't say it out loud, obviously, but you know they were looking at it going, well, we got two wins there. Now we just got to come up with, eight more?
Yeah.
Nine more to make sure that we are in the playoffs. And
And listen, I talked about this with the Bills too, right? The Bills had that long drought of what, 2000, the Music City Miracle, until they made the playoffs, what, 2 years ago, a year ago, when but a lot of that was the success of the New England Patriots. And you can make the same case that a lot of what the Browns were going through in 20 years were the success of the Pittsburgh Steelers when Roethlisberger emerged in the early 2000s and they became another team that was going to the playoffs consistently. The Ravens obviously had their share of good years. Bengals even had a few good years. So I get that. But overall, the overall game plan, the execution of building a team and putting a team together, this team has failed time and time and time and time again, and now they feel like they've got it together. Now it feels like it's all coming together, that the talent is there, the youth is there, the energy is there, the moxie is there, that it's all put together in a package that's going to lead to more wins than their 7-8-1 season last year, which was a blessing for that city that had put up with one win in two seasons. I mean, 7-8-1 must have felt like winning the division, for crying out loud, if your team wins one game in 32 contests. So we'll continue our preview of the Cleveland Browns. John Doss is going to join us, WEWS Sports out in Cleveland. We'll talk to him coming up in 15 minutes about the Browns and all of the changes that are coming Cleveland's way and how much of a threat they will be in the North. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, summer's heat can be draining on your vehicle's battery. Rising temperatures can cause battery fluids to evaporate. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts now. Have your battery tested free of charge if your battery does need to be replaced. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the exact superstar battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Is this Bobby Brown?
That's Bobby Brown.
I love Bobby Brown. What's that song he sings where he goes, "What's this? I can't have money in my pocket and people not talk about me. This world is a trip." Is that my prerogative?
I think so.
I think, yeah, that was more late 80s, I think.
Yeah.
Like Bobby Brown, what happened to him? Where'd he go?
He's still around.
Is he still around?
No, not doing anything, but
He's still around. Okay. Where'd he go?
I think he did didn't he do a part of the New Edition reunion tour?
Yeah, like I think so. That might have been. You might have been right. All right, we told you this story yesterday. It's now been confirmed. Antonio Brown did suffer frostbite on his feet from a cryotherapy machine in France.
He did. Never would have guessed that.
No kidding. Brown was not wearing appropriate footwear when he entered the cryotherapy chamber last month in France and burned his feet, leaving them frostbitten. Oh, you got to be careful when you go into those machines at minus 200 or whatever they are. John Gruden said Brown is still, they're still collecting information on the injury. It doesn't expect to be long term. How do you know that? That it's not going to be long term. He had frostbite on his feet. Did he lose any toes? Because we always hear that with people with frostbitten feet. They lost a toe. How do we know that? How bad of a burn is it? How bad is the frostbite? There's different levels of frostbite. This frostbite that turns makes your skin turn dark and it gets all like, oh God, that's terrible. I got to cut that off.
My favorite so far is I was watching SportsCenter last night, and Sal Palatonio, I guess, you know, ESPN is extending his role to just being instead of just being Eagles only, because he was at Raiders training camp and said he was talking to a doctor who looked at a picture. He was giving medical advice based on a picture that he saw on SportsCenter of his feet.
Uh-oh.
But it's healing nicely.
Oh.
But he's still at least 2 to 3 weeks away from setting to like actually being able to walk.
All right, I'm going to look this up. Really, really, like really.
That this is a bad frostbite, but it is healing nicely. The skin is peeling where it's supposed to peel off, and you know, and the main thing that he needs to take care of right now is just to make sure that there's no infection.
Okay, so that's not so bad. By the way, if you Google cryotherapy frostbite, Antonio Brown's name comes up all over the place.
No way!
All all over the place. So I'm trying to figure out how cold those machines are, because they're supposed to be.
And were his feet directly on them?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, exactly. And so how cold, when you go into those machines, what are they telling you that it, how cold it is? So it's got to be minus. I'm thinking in the. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to remember what I remember hearing about this.
I mean, I'm gonna show my Southern California-ness right now. Can you get frostbite without actually touching frost? Like, can you just be out in the elements and just get frostbite from it being cold? Or
don't know. I've never had frostbite. Even growing up in New Hampshire, I was well covered, thanks to my mother. Go out there with five gloves and a snowsuit.
And how many people do you think, like, in New Hampshire, Maine, Alaska, are just laughing?
Yeah.
Going, you're an idiot.
Gotta stay covered. All right, so here's the overview. Okay, because I really am curious about this. I mean, AB went into a machine to help some, you know, muscles. But this is the overview of it. Cryotherapy, which literally means cold therapy, is a technique where the body is exposed to extreme cold temperatures for several minutes. It can be delivered to just one area, or you can opt for a whole body cryotherapy. Localized cryotherapy can be administered in a number of ways, including through ice packs, ice massages. I don't want to hear about that. I want to hear about the machine.
Sign me up, man. This sounds incredible.
Okay, the theory for whole body cryotherapy is that by immersing the body, okay, this is important because this is what AB was looking for. Immersing the body in extreme cold air for several minutes, you could receive a number of health benefits. The individual will stand in an enclosed chamber or a small enclosure that surrounds their body but has an opening for their head at the top. The enclosure will drop between, and get this, negative 200 to 300 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know how you survive this.
How does that feel good?
They stay in the ultra low temperature air for 2 to 4 minutes. You get benefits from just one. You can get benefits from just one session, but it's mostly effective when used regularly. Okay, here's the benefits: reduces migraine symptoms, numbs nerve irritation, helps treat mood disorders, reduce arthritic pain, may help treat low risk tumors, may help prevent dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Don't make that claim. We don't, without really knowing. Treats. Dermatitis and other skin conditions. Risks and side effects. You should never use cryotherapy for longer than is recommended for the method of the therapy you're using. For the whole body, it would be more than 4 minutes. If you're using an ice pack or an ice bath at home, you should never apply the ice to an area for more than 20 minutes. And that's what he was doing. He was trying to get the health benefits from this machine in France, which, by the way, you don't have to go to France to do this. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
These places are all over the place.
But I mean, how is that minus 200 degrees?
Yeah, 300 degrees.
How is that even? I'm a Southern California boy. When it's like 20 degrees out, I can't go out there, you know, without looking like the little kid in the Christmas story.
Minus,
I can't put my arms down.
Minus 200 to 300. I don't know. Somebody,
that's cold, man.
I need to know the science, because that to me sounds like you would die. You know what I mean?
I mean, I get it. Like, if you didn't put your chest in there, maybe you just had your legs. But I feel like at that point, don't you just, if you're there too long, don't they just take a hammer and your legs just crumble?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, that's, I don't, so, because listen, I grew up in New Hampshire and we always were told, you know, exposed skin. Like, we would get wind chill, like minus 35, 30, 40 degrees sometimes. Like, there'd be some winters where it was painful cold. Like, you'd go outside and you would be hurting. And this is when you'd be covered up. This is when you'd be in layers and layers of clothes. And I used to have to walk to school, you know, walk to the school bus when I was a little kid and be like, I'm not going to make it. This is terrible. Minus 200 degrees. Why are you still living?
Is this so cold that it's beyond painful, that you don't even feel the pain?
I'm thinking that's
like
the case.
Instantly numb.
God, what a risk this was. I bet he was never told. I bet he was never told you could get frostbite. I bet he was never told.
I'm sure they said, you know, hey, like, you want to cover up the
make sure you wear
areas.
The sandals.
Because you know what? The certain area did not get frostbite. He probably took well care
That's
of that
That's a
part.
Good point. Great point, Ron Culver. All right, we'll talk Browns. John Doss out in Cleveland. WEWS Television. Breakdown the Browns coming up next. SB Nation AM.
Go, go.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Yeah, Chris Cross will make you jump. 1992 Throwback Thursday, celebrating on this date at the Olympics, the Dream Team winning the gold medal over Croatia. That's our Throwback Thursday. John Doss joins us, WEWS, or television, out in Cleveland as we preview the Browns. He's on our Progressive Insurance Hotline. Making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. That's Progressive. Get a quote today at progressive.com. How are you, John?
I'm doing great now. Anytime I can get crisscrossed this early in the morning on Thursday.
That's right. We try. We try to do our best. John, it goes without saying that there's excitement going on in Cleveland. Just give us the local view on how energized this city is around what this team has and what this team's potential can be.
Yeah, I don't even know that excitement really describes it. This is something we've been trying to, I think, accurately describe for a little while now, ever since really Odell Beckham came over in March. This is a city, I mean, you guys know, everybody around the country knows, it's been the butt of jokes for decades. This is a city that has not had a winning football franchise, really, I guess, one time in the last 30 years. So this is a team that when they're picked to fifth, to win the division, they've got the fifth best odds to go to the Super Bowl. People want to buy into those. Problem is, you know, now they got to actually win the games.
John, from Baker Mayfield's standpoint, what makes him different than other quarterbacks who've come in with a little hype, come in with a little excitement? Obviously, he's delivered, but he sort of had that from the very beginning. What is it about him, personality-wise, athletic-wise, that makes him a little different?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, obviously, the one thing that makes him different is he's good.
Right.
Or at least he appears to be good, right? The comparisons between he and Johnny Manziel were insane from day one, because Johnny Manziel never proved anything on the field. Whereas, you know, nobody threw more touchdown passes as a rookie than Baker Mayfield, and remember, he did it in just over 13 games. But he's got that moxie that every good quarterback needs. He's got that chip on his shoulder that he will never let go. Just this last week, somebody asked him if he had been more vocal in this camp as opposed to last year, his rookie camp, and he said, well, yeah, it's kind of hard to be vocal when you're the backup. So he will never forget that Hugh Jackson came in here and made Tyrod Taylor the starter when he thought he should have been the starter from day one. So he's got that moxie. He's got that chip. Obviously, he's a little cocky, but he backs it up. I'll tell you what, the reason why he's been so successful here is because he's a really smart guy and he gets this fan base. I don't know that if he were in any other city that he'd be on a jumbotron biting into a can of beer and shotgunning it. But he understands the fan base. He understands the demographic. He understands this region. He knows what's going to make him successful here.
Freddie Kitchens is the head coach. Greg Williams was running the team last year after Hugh Jackson got fired. Was this the right call? It does stay in-house. I like that. But was this the right call, or is this still being a wait-and-see approach?
Well, I definitely think the front office appreciated the success that the offense had under Freddie those last eight games of the season. And maybe you can say, well, the offensive line got better and Baker was getting more and more comfortable every game in his rookie season. But if you got a situation like that where you like the guy's offense and Baker Mayfield really loves Freddie Kitchens, essentially this is a what's best for Baker is best for the team situation. So is Freddie going to be flawless in each scenario as a rookie head coach? No, definitely not. He'll probably be the first person to tell you that. But if Baker Mayfield is comfortable with him, you guys know it's a quarterback-driven league. Yeah. That's all that matters.
The Kareem Hunt signing, controversial, I would assume, but in terms of production, what will he bring eight games into the season when he comes back?
Controversial, right, and quite coincidental as well, because that whole incident that happened at a hotel literally less than a mile away from First Energy Stadium here in Cleveland. You know, he's a local guy, and so I don't know that that signing would have gone over quite as easily in most other places. I think people here rationalized it because he was a local guy. Hey, we're going to give him a second chance, and why wouldn't we give him a second chance right here in his hometown? But That's what's going to be really interesting, because right now they already have a really solid running back in Nick Chubb, and Duke Johnson's a guy who has requested a trade ever since Kareem Hunt got brought in here, but Duke Johnson's arguably one of the top five number two backs in the NFL too, so it'll be interesting what happens when Hunt comes back. But you got to remember, by the time Hunt can play in the ninth game of the season, he won't have played for really an entire calendar year. So this isn't something that I don't think anybody here expects him to be Kareem Hunt expects him to take that kind of workload really early on, or really even until they, knock on wood, get to the playoff.
John Doss joins us, WEWS in Cleveland, on a Progressive Insurance Hotline as we preview the Browns here on SB Nation Radio. You brought up Odell Beckham. Now that this pairs up with Jarvis Landry, the LSU teammates. Antonio Callaway, what's his role? What's he going to do? What's his part of this offense?
Well, they still love Antonio Callaway, and I still think he's the number three receiver. This is all of a sudden a really deep wide receiving core. I think they were worried about it last year. It was going to be Jarvis Landry and nobody else. Of course, the way Baker Mayfield is able to spread the ball around helps them a little bit, but it's all of a sudden a really deep receiving core. Rashard Higgins is going to play a big role in there as well, and I think Antonio Callaway is too. He's somebody who really came on as of late last year, a guy that a lot of people in the league thought had first-round talent. Obviously, a lot of things went wrong when he was in Florida, but this is a coaching staff I think really believes in Antonio Callaway's talent. You haven't heard a peep from him since he's been here. He'll also be returning punts, so I think he's going to play a pretty big role in the team.
John, we talked about some offense and a lot of people focusing on those additions. There has been some additions to the defense, and Myles Garrett had a good season last year. In terms of defensively, how do the Browns look?
Well, Myles is going to be very happy that you asked this question because he said at camp last week, he said, yeah, man, every time Odell catches a slant, the crowd goes wild. It is actually... it's pretty funny to watch that at training camp here because, you know, the fans are out there almost every day at training camp. And the most minor offensive play that happens, they lose their minds. And then the Browns get a pick six or something, and there's almost this groan that comes over the crowd. So it certainly feels like the defense is playing true road environments already so far. But, no, yeah, Myles Garrett, I mean – most people are going to expect him to be a top three, if not top five, pass rusher in the NFL this year. And then you pair him up on the other side with Olivier Vernon, who came over from the Giants in that big trade that included OBJ. And Sheldon Richardson, Larry Ogunjobi, you can't double any of these guys. So if you're looking at somebody trying to block Myles Garrett one-on-one and Olivier Vernon one-on-one over the course of an entire game, it's going to get messy.
John Dorsey coming in as general manager. I mean, look, we know he's very smart football-wise, but why does it feel like he's been able to do things when for 20 years since their reinception in the league, nothing has really been happening?
Yeah,
I mean, is it aggressiveness, John? Is he just taking more risks? Or I mean,
I don't think so. Guys, look, I really do think things are as simple as you have a quarterback. He made the right decision with the number one overall pick last year. He could have selected Saquon Barkley and then went down and said, I'll get whoever's left, and maybe Baker Mayfield's there, and maybe he's not. He picked Baker Mayfield, and that changes the trajectory of a franchise. That changes the entire outlook of a franchise. When you have what you think is a superstar quarterback on a rookie deal, you can do whatever you want. And it's not just that you think you have a superstar quarterback on a rookie deal. You've got what you think is a superstar cornerback in Denzel Ward on a rookie deal. You've still got Myles Garrett on a rookie deal. When your best players are 24 or younger, 25 or younger, you can pay that Olivier Vernon. You can go out and get Odell Beckham Jr. When the key players are on those rookie deals, you do whatever you want.
I like to always ask kind of big picture questions to markets because I like to get a feel for what is really going on the ground in terms of the fan base. And as I mentioned earlier, right, this is an organization that had, you know, left for Baltimore, but then got a new team, an expansion team, and nonetheless, but still had the same logo and name. But for 20 years, one playoff appearance. The fan base watched Carolina become a new team and go to two Super Bowls. They watched Jacksonville go to a couple of AFC championship games. Houston has had some success as an expansion team. What is it like for a Cleveland Browns fan to spend 20 years, over a generation, and say, wait a minute, when is it our turn?
And obviously their most hated rival, Pittsburgh, has won a number of Super Bowls.
Right, sure.
Baltimore itself has won Super Bowls since they left this area. This is a team, I certainly feel like this city feels that way, that this is their time now. And that's why it is unbridled enthusiasm. Ever since OBJ came back, came over here, it was, wow, this team could realistically not just go to the playoffs, but win a Super Bowl. And there's also, it's tied to this idea that Baker Mayfield's going to be here for a long time, they hope. So there's this feeling in the city, well, if Baker's here for 15 years, we may win two or three Super Bowls. But you got to be careful. And this is what I tell people around here is, it will never get as good as it is right now, because the Browns won the offseason, and they know they won the offseason, and right now that enthusiasm is through the roof and the sky is the limit. Inevitably, reality will hit, and it will never feel as good until the Browns eventually win the Super Bowl. But I got to think at some point Baker Mayfield continues to grow. They've got a realistic shot, and I think they do too.
Absolutely. John Dossigan, I really appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much. Hope we catch up with you during the season. If it is starting to come together and they're making a lot of noise during the season.
Absolutely, guys. Give me a call anytime.
You got it. John Doss, WEWS in sports anchor in Cleveland. And I think he hit it on the head. I mean, there is a feeling, right? It's a good point. I mean, he makes a really good point. It isn't going to be as good right now until they win the Super Bowl. Because, again, there's expectations, and they won the offseason, and there is so thick you could pour it on pancakes, the kind of enthusiasm that is out there, right? I mean, that, think about all the things they've got going for them. I mean, just the weapons that we talked about, right? Odell Beckham with Jarvis Landry. Antonio Callaway, who had a pretty good year last year, now is just your third receiver as an offensive threat. So, amazing.
I mean, think about it. Do you move him to the slot? Maybe Jarvis Landry goes
maybe
to the slot?
Maybe so. You can move Jarvis Landry all sorts of places now, yeah. Right? I mean, that's the beauty of using his talent and having this offensive scheme.
Can you imagine Landry as a slot receiver going up against middle linebackers?
Unreal.
There's no hope.
This is going to be – and then I also said, look – take Kareem Hunt's controversy, push it off to the side. And I know it's hard to do, but just football wise, he's not getting back into the league until week 9. I mean, think about having a fresh running back to take the burden off of Nick Chubb, and then figuring out in your backfield when you have a guy that's fresh coming off the suspension, and then Nick Chubb, how the running game opens up what Odell Beckham is going to do. And by the way, Odell Beckham helping the running game because defenses can't, you know, they have to cover him, right? I mean, they have to send a guy to cover him. So now you've this offense has so much potential to be dangerous. And oh, by the way, as he mentioned, defensively, Olivier Vernon, they add him to the defense. They've got Myles Garrett, who had 13 and a half sacks last year.
I love the fact that he's saying that anytime Baker Mayfield throws an interception, the crowd is booing.
Yeah, right.
And growing.
Right. Not so, showcasing how good the defense could possibly be.
So the defense is already playing in front of a hostile crowd.
Right.
Like, great.
That's right. I mean, Sheldon Richardson also came in. I mean, this is...
Yeah, Olivier Vernon.
I mean, this is...
Just go down the list. And then you have...
Still got Denzel Ward playing in the corner Denzel position, Ward, right? And God, this is going to be... I mean, I'm almost scared now.
You should be, but I mean, you know what? It's going to be fun.
It is going
to
be fun.
And even Steeler fan like you has to be curious about what can the Browns do. You want Browns finishing second.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe the Browns finish 11-5 to the Steelers 12-4, and you're happy.
Maybe Lamar Jackson has the bad second year, right? Maybe he has the one that doesn't work out.
Honestly, I think that's almost a given.
Yeah.
Because Baker Mayfield might slip a little bit, but he has too many weapons around him.
God, and here's the other thing real quick. And I don't want to simplify it like this because we kind of are in the business of really analyzing some of the things. But sometimes we go with gut, and there's just this gut feeling that Baker Mayfield has it to play at the NFL level, right? That this isn't just going to be one of those crazy rookie years that worked out because nobody knew what he was capable of, had a really good year, but then all of a sudden it just declines and declines. We've seen that story play out a number of times. And sometimes it's not your rookie year. Sometimes you're just a backup, and then you get in like your second year and you do really well. Then you become a starter, and then all of a sudden it falls apart and we never hear from you again. There is something about Mayfield that is just working. There's this it factor that he has that I think he's gonna, like he said, he's gonna be at Cleveland a long time. I think he's gonna be successful for a long time. I think he's going to have it in this league. But it is scary in the AFC North when you think about how good Pittsburgh is going to be, how good Baltimore is, how good Cleveland is going to be. It's a good division. All right, we'll come back, wrap it up, and give us the final thoughts on the Browns on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. This is the earwormy song of 1992, wasn't it?
Isn't it?
It really was.
You're just going to be going around today going, please don't go.
Robert on Twitter, we talked about the cryotherapy for Antonio Brown. He said, dry ice, so cold it's burning hot. Old-time ice cream wagons use dry ice.
Yeah.
Man, that's I want to try it. I'm curious. I'd love to try it.
Try what?
The cryotherapy chamber.
Oh, cryo.
No,
okay.
Dry ice. What are you talking about? Oh, I have a quick. Can I tell a quick story about Crisscross? We had them in the last bumper music as we entered in. Okay, early 90s, I was in the mall shopping Christmas time, and I was walking around the mall shopping, and I was in a record store back when we had record stores, and I was going through some albums, whatnot, and an elderly woman came up to me, and she said, "This is." I mean, even back then, I was just this out of touch geek. This woman came up to me and she said, "Can you help me find an album for my grandsons for Christmas?" I said, "Yes." Yeah. She goes, I don't know very much about it, but they're looking for Criss Cross." And I said, "Oh yeah, I know that." And sure, you know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going with
that. I went right to the soft rock album and I pulled up Christopher Cross and I gave her the album. You remember Christopher Cross?
Yeah.
Ride Like the Wind, and he did Arthur theme and all that. And I gave it to her and she looked at the album and it was a guy in bare feet sitting on a beach with an acoustic guitar, and she said, "I don't think this is the album my grandchildren want."
And she would be correct.
And I went, "Oh, I think there's a rap group by that name. I'll help you find that." But I confused Criss Cross with Christopher Cross.
You almost ruined some kids' Christmas.
She almost, it's crazy.